This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora, welcome to Free Left Turn, a left-wing perspective here on Free FM 89.0, independent community media. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Oh, Fred.
Good morning,
Greg.
Nick.
Good morning.
Top of the morning.
Yeah. I'm trying to lift my
glass. All right, lift your game.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Then, yeah, plenty of things happening in the news in the big wide world.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Should we start?
Yeah.
Let's go for a good positive.
Yeah.
It's Sir David Attenborough reached 100.
Yeah, 8th of May, yeah.
Or reaching 100 is probably... Yeah. When's 8th of May? It's the 8th of May today over there, is it?
Yeah, I think they...
It's not fair.
Yeah,
so they were a day behind. So, you know, we know he's from the land of gentry class, et cetera, and has had some privilege, et cetera, but he's done well to get to 100 and still... Does documentaries and everything else, and he has been a big advocate for the environment and the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think happy birthday. Yeah. You know,
I think 8th of May is also famous for another occasion too. The Russians are celebrating their victory over Nazi Germany.
They are. Apart from they've announced a ceasefire. Did you see that?
Yeah,
Trump's
announced
they're having 3 days between Ukraine and Russia. So whether that's...
Trump's announced it.
Yeah. Mm. Don't ask me how it works.
Yeah, I thought the Ukrainians had proposed this, truce or something, but there's been a bit of a kerfuffle going on.
But, of course, Russia's scaled back all its use of tanks. You know, it usually has a big May Day parade and all that shows all its weaponry going down the parade and everything else.
It'd be a bit hard to try and find some...
spare tanks now, because it's been a brutal war. The Russians have suffered enormously through the Western weapons, etc. The Ukrainians and Russian soldiers are dying. Western weaponry has been used in the main, which means money. A lot of money has flowed out of this war.
Yes, and some a number of people have made a profit.
Oh, and huge profits. Yeah. And I did see somewhere there was an article, and I didn't bring it in, but because I missed where it was, but about the environmental the CO2 that's gone into the world in the last, since the Iranian, Israel, Ukraine, Russia use of weaponry. They don't count it on any things, but it was millions of extra tons of CO2 gone into the atmosphere.
Yeah, that was brought up when they were bombing the hell out of Gaza.
Of course. And it doesn't get nearly enough publicity as it should. It's about what's the damage. Even in the Iran thing, you blow up a boat or a ship, the oil goes into the sea, apart from the human lives lost. Where do we get the commentary about that? It's sort of, the only thing we see is, America's, destroyed their navy. What about the environmental damage as well?
Can you say they've dropped more tonnage of bombs and gas than they had the equivalent of two nuclear weapons?
I saw that. It's just horrendous.
Staggering amounts.
It's a staggering amount on a defenceless population.
Yeah.
That's the...
And now we're getting Democrats with a spine questioning people who should know this about what about Israel's nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I see that.
Which,
let's face it,
they refuse to admit that they've got them.
Yeah, they questioned this clown, and he wouldn't give an answer.
Well, and the argument has been, you know, America said, well, we needed to attack Iran because we're going to get a nuclear weapon, which have been saying that...
For 30 years.
Israel's been saying that for 30, 40 years, that they're, they're 2 weeks, 1 week, how many days away from nuclear weapons. But that, so they've saying, well, it's bad that Iran gets it, but we won't say anything about Israel having it. You know? What do you call that? Hypocrisy or just...
Stupidity.
Bias, you know?
Well, it's all, probably a mixture of all those words.
Yeah, because
I don't know what... He was an undersecretary of whatever, and he was questioned by this Democrat. I forget his name. May come to me later. But this person would just... To me, it was stalling. For time.
They sort of looked and say that's the... That's the hypocrisy, is that the big bad Iran, and yet they look the other way when it comes to Israel.
Basically, have they got weapons or not? Have they got nuclear weapons?
Well, we know they have, because the they've got records. They know that they've got a nuclear area, etc. And wasn't there a guy, Pollard or something, was an American, and he was caught spying for Israel.
Wasn't he an American Israeli?
Was an American. Well, you know what they call American Israeli, but his loyalties seem to be to Israel, because he lives there now in Israel.
He's been in jail for yonks.
And he got pardoned, etc. So he's in Israel, got a hero's welcome, and now he's standing for the Knesset in Israel. I saw an article saying that. And Tucker Carlson gave when he was interviewing the... Who's the American ambassador to Israel?
Huckabee.
Huckabee had it went and saw Pollard. And, you know, not like shame on you, it was, because let's face it, this guy stole American secrets. You think he'd be sort of polarized, you know, and blacklisted, but no. And so Tucker gave him a hard time on it. But Huckabee is unfortunately very much in the, I don't know how you describe him, he's very much a believer in
He's a Christian nut job.
That's probably a fairly good way of putting it, you know. Not to detract from true Christians, but, you know, his belief is pretty out there.
Yeah, I watched Jack Cocciarella, I think that's how you say it, some podcast, because he's a left-wing United States commentator, and he had a snippet about Nick Fuentes wanting to join the Democrats, and he was another one who voiced why are we dealing with Israel when they've got nuclear weapons? Yeah. And I find that quite an eye opener.
Even though
I think his call to join the Democrats was probably some sort of just a bit of a joke, I'd say.
I think Americans have woken up that Israel is now controlling America. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Americans realise suddenly, oh, hang on a minute, how come everything we seem to do in foreign policy is to do what Israel wants? And that's America's having a huge discussion as we go on about it.
And I think the same podcaster showed a poll of support, and it showed that the support for Israel, the Zionist state, and Palestine were at 50-50.
Which it was. Look, you couldn't say anything bad about Israel at all 3 or 4 years ago. And especially around the October 7th incident and tragedy. And, of course, atrocities it was, of course. You know, I say now that the discussion's out there and it's not going back.
That's a decline for the Zionist state support.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting to it to go under 50. See what happens then.
Well, I think if Israel keeps killing and just playing roughshod over not just the Middle East, but it plays roughshod over American policy. People, you know, Bernie Sanders was at a primary for Abdul Saeed, who's standing for a senator in Michigan. He's the underdog, and he's up. It's for their Democratic primary. And of course, Bernie's endorsing him. But Bernie was having a good go about America's involvement for Israel. You know, just why are we doing all this for Israel? You know, when we've got all these problems at home. There's a lot of money. Go back to what you said, Mick. A lot of money made out of weaponry.
Yeah, unfortunately.
You know, and so they're not in a hurry. You know, you're a shareholder, and even say, oh, it's just the manufacturers. These manufacturing companies are owned by wealthy families around the world.
Yeah. War is business.
Yeah. And so we think, well, why hasn't New Zealand been more forthright about anti-war, etc.? But I say that, you know, the wealthy own shares.
And for, yeah, that's probably, yeah.
Often shares in all sorts of manufacturing companies that make money out of war,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know, because they talked about how much money Rocket Lab or
military.
And old Beck was skiting about the fact that they helped with this recent trip to the moon and back.
Yeah.
Basically, just look at the dark side of it. But he didn't talk about the other things, the spying part.
A lot of it you don't know, etc. But let's face it, there's a lot of companies make money out of supporting the military efforts.
That's where I think a lot of the money for Rocket Lab is coming from.
Yeah, well,
supporting the military efforts, particularly in the Middle East.
Well, if you can get a contract, you provide a service, or you've got an idea, and you can get these private military companies to suddenly order stuff off you.
Mm.
Well, that's money in the bank, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. Also this week was what was going to be? I said in your there, Mick, Broadcasting Standards Authority. Is may be coming to an end.
They're talking about cutting it or axing it
next year.
There's a cartoon by Sharon Murdoch. It's a wall with Goldsmith walking past, and on the wall it says, "No Broadcasting Standards Authority. The authority's been deleted." And Timana Whanaonga, how do you pronounce that? Whanonga. Whanonga, is that how you pronounce it?
I've never looked.
Yeah, go to the expert, the pronunciation expert.
Whanonga. Te mana whanonga kai paho. Paho is broadcast.
And Goldsmith's saying that the bubble, he's got a little speech bubble above it saying it's all about freedom of my speech.
Yes, that was that comment about me. I wrote this differently to how it should be said, but I thought it was funny. Media to become regulatory by self.
Yeah, and there's an article by Stephen Price, who's a barrister specialising in media law, practising in Wellington. He publishes the Media Law Journal blog, where this article appeared, and it said that the government has decided to abolish the Broadcasting Standards Authority. Various people are crying about it. They point to the BSA's decision to hear a complaint against internet broadcaster The Platform.
Yeah,
this was an attempt to police the internet, to stretch a law written for rabbit ear TVs over podcasts and live stream. And he goes on to add, it's not clear whether this will be passed by the election. I'm inclined to think it shouldn't be, in part to give time for proper debate, and in part because it would make sense to make this an election issue. Also, they have jurisdiction to hear complaints about the falsity of election advertisements. And the media, that goes... he says, might tweak the standards if they get rid of it. He said, why would you choose them to do this? The members of the Media Council are members of the public, a judge and print media types. What do they know about broadcasting? Another thing, the World of Broadcasters join. It's not mandatory. The platform isn't a member. Also, guess who's likely to uphold a complaint? Hint, it's not the BSA. At present, the Media Council is 2 or 3 times more likely to uphold any given complaint than the BSA. That's partly because, irony alert, the BSA takes the right to freedom of expression under the Bill of Rights Act very seriously. The Media Council, not so much. At least it barely mentions it. It goes on and on and on. You bring a complaint to the Media Council, there's no appeal from a Media Council decision. It's possible that this will produce other unwelcome consequences. If you're treated unfairly by a broadcaster, including The Platform, your first instinct might go to a complaints body. But if there isn't one, your only alternative might be to sue.
Well, why don't promote more and more fake... falsities, etc.
And no accountability. No.
Yeah, and let's face it, with the PSNA, etc., Palestine Solidarity Network, Aotearoa, has often put complaints into the Broadcasting Standards Authority about coverage on mainstream media, etc. And they usually get bounced back and say, nah, you know, it hasn't reached the standard that we need to, we'll do anything, etc.
They tell us what the standard
should be. Yeah, they do. They do give you a reply. Yeah. So it's quite important, because what happens is, if you don't have that and you're not allowed to complain to, to anyone, then what happens? Everyone just
open slather.
Then it's just open slather.
And these people say, well, complaints are down, no? And everyone's happy. No one's complaining.
Yeah, exactly.
No one says anything
because no one knows. It's like trying to find the Hamilton East MP. You can't, don't know where he is. You know, you can't find anyone to complain to, so then you don't do anything. The Broadcasting Standing Authority is like a protection agency, and we all know when it comes to self-governing. What do we see with Pike River? What do we see with the fishing industry when you can put your own camera up and you decide if you're going to basically have it going or not? You know, self-regulation. Speed cameras. You imagine if we were talking about before we come on here, we didn't have self-regulation for the road code. You know, the road highways. Would everyone just drive along at a reasonable rate? No.
I think
self-regulation for paying tax. Well, that actually happens for the well-off.
Yeah.
So
that's already existence.
Yeah, it's already in existence. Oops.
Yeah. It's a protection. The BSA is a protection apparatus, and we do get commentary from the station here around what we can and can't, at election time or and they do share information around the language that has been used and people have been punished for.
I'm all for that. If we say something here, I'm someone complains about it, then it should be looked at. And is it fair? Is it over the top? Or have we done it wrong? We need to know.
Yeah,
we need to know. That's fair enough.
I put out in here the need for free left turn to maintain its high standards.
But
this is a further erosion of democracy.
But I put it this way: we're none of us are getting paid for what we do here. This is just it's an opinion fest, etc. But if you're actually a broadcasting business, et cetera, then you have an obligation to make sure what you put out there is
robust and correct.
Has veracity.
Because
otherwise you go down the America track where the CNN is a bias one way, Fox is biased another way. The bias comes out and you don't... What's actually the news? Well, you only get it from an angle.
The bias is already in existence now.
It's all opinionated.
And it's dangerous because a lot of people, like us three, are reasonably interested in what's going on, and we get it right, wrong, whatever, but we're interested. A lot of people aren't interested. So what they hear on the TV One news or the occasionally if they listen to it or hear they take that as gospel.
Look at
the COVID thing and all that, people just take things as gospel without checking the veracity.
My personal beef currently, or my it's a relatively new one, is when TV One talks about the Iranian war. But is it the Iranian war? Is it a illegal war?
Well, it shouldn't be called the Iranian war.
It shouldn't be.
The Israeli-American attack on Iran.
Illegal war.
Iran wasn't attacking no one.
Yeah, so it's not the change the wording, please.
But they won't. But I agree with you entirely. Why is it called the Iran war when Iran was the innocent party?
And
we know they were the innocent party.
And I know that sort of comment resonates with certain people, reinforces their bias anyway.
But also...
Name it the Iranian war. Those people.
But does it show you the link between the people that own the media companies and also the war, who also have shares in the military companies?
That's what I think.
Why is it all labelled like that? Is it this bigger control going on?
That's the issue here too. Okay, so that was that. The other one that we talked about last week, because you mentioned it, Mick, about the upcoming, it was at the time, the upcoming council elections in England, Wales and Scotland. And they were held on the 7th, weren't they?
Which is out. The results are virtually all done now.
I can
give you a rough idea what's going on. The pollsters...
Labour got a thrashing.
Labour got a spanking. But the polls predicted that. I think just when I left this morning, Labour had lost 1,300 seats. This is your council seats. So what happened is Scotland and Wales were having they had their local parliaments, and they were having elections for their parliaments, and England was having some council elections.
Was it in Northern Ireland? Do you know?
No, they're next year.
Yeah, okay.
So Scotland has got, they were having elections for the Hollywood. It's not Hollywood, it's Hollywood.
R-O-D-D, yeah.
And what do they call the one in Wales? The Senate. Yeah, not the Senate. Yeah, something like that.
I don't know what they call it.
Synod or something like that.
You would know.
I can't remember that. It's a Welsh name.
Yeah, Welsh name. Yeah. So anyway, the results basically is it's been reforms night, basically. But I think the irony of it was they've got 1,390 seats, and they only had very few councillors. So they've virtually swept the board. But they haven't had all these councils. They don't. Most of them aren't the seat. The councillors' positions aren't up for grab. Only a third of them.
Mm-hmm.
So although reformers had this huge victory of a landslide, they actually haven't changed many council. That's what I want your opinion on.
Yeah.
To me, that's basically it's. Is it right or is it just? It's just what do you call it? Ensuring the status quo continues. Because
those votes have been cast, people have made their votes in genuine belief making a difference, and it appears no difference.
Yeah, so okay, reform has got the majorities might have gone down with the Labour and Conservative councils, and some have been changed. But and there have been some councils that have all been up for election. But it reminds me of the Senate in America, where they only have a third come up for voting at any one time.
Yeah.
And that protects the status quo, which has advantages and disadvantages. It doesn't mean that's... But when you get such a big sweeping... And I'm not a reform backer at all. But is it fair that they get such a huge landslide of votes and don't actually change anything?
No.
You know what I mean?
I know reform did field an enormous number of candidates.
Yeah, but they've gone from basically nothing to 1,400 councillors, which is huge. The other winners are, of course, the Greens, picked up 300 or 400 more seats, apparently. So they'd be quite pleased with their result. And the social, what do you got, the Liberal Democrats have probably been the middle of the road party, and they've increased a little bit, but they've been stable. They haven't been knocked around like Labour, and the Conservatives have been punished.
Lost, yeah.
The Conservatives lost 300 or 400 council seats.
Good.
So it's an indicator to me that, and especially in England, okay, councils, most of them will keep running with less majorities, etc. But it's an indicator. But I just think, why don't you just, if you're having elections, it should be like...
Right across the board.
Shouldn't be across the board. And okay, if people want to go and vote for the all reform to run that council, if it becomes a mess, well, okay, you might have learned something from it.
Okay.
But I just think it's weird. So anyway, that's what happened in England. In Wales, Plaid Cymru has been the majority, hasn't got a majority, absolute majority, but it's got the major votes. Reform was second, and they needed, I think they needed something like 49 votes or
seats. Well, you kept more abreast of it than I did.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I've just been watching it the last day or so. So Plaid Cymru is a major party, so they'll be asked to form a government, and they haven't got a majority, so they will have to do it with, I suggest the Labour, they'll do it with the Labour Party rather than Reform, you'd think. And Labour got a hiding. Wales has been run by Labour for 100 years, as old as Sir David Attenborough, one of them, made the comments. So this is big for Wales, that Labour has still got some seats, so they might be asked to be a junior partner in the coalition.
Al Jazeera covered this, and a lot of people in Wales were upset with Labour, that the Labour Party in Wales is different to the Labour Party in England.
And the Labour Party class,
two citizen type.
But I believe Plaid Cymru is quite a, what I call, a left-wing social justice type of party, so it's not a bad thing they're getting in, whereas Reform seems to be based on race and immigration.
And immigration did play a part.
A huge part. Whole thing in England, you know, where Reform hasn't done as well was in London, etc. Anywhere there's lots of multiculturalism, they haven't done as well.
Yeah.
But those sort of white enclaves.
Yeah, mainly in the north.
Yeah, so the north has voted Reform in a big way.
Yeah, because they felt they've been deserted. By Labour and by the Tories. Yeah. And
how much of that, I think personally it's a class issue. It's the inequalities behind it all, driving the whole thing.
It has been for years.
But it's very easy to sell to Benny, who hasn't got a job, that someone comes up to him and says, you know why you're struggling, mate? It's those brown people coming aboard. You know, coming on here, that's what your problem is. Never mind that I've just got how many million pounds from some perk. That doesn't come into
it. And I might have fleeced you and your family.
that doesn't come into it. It's those people's fault.
Yeah.
It's classic. And the last one is, of course, Scotland.
Yep.
And Scotland, SNP, Scottish National Party, has, they haven't got a majority, but I think they need something like 69 seats or 59 seats, and they're just a few short.
So they need a coalition partner.
So did Scottish Labour or Scottish Tories make any inroads?
No, the Scottish Labour Party is still there. The biggest inroads probably is the Greens have done very well.
Right.
And they have, unlike England, they have constituencies, which we would call electorates. Mm. So they have 50-something, I think there's nearly 100 seats in the Holyrood. I think it's called, and just over half are constituencies, and then they have a what they call regional, which is proportional.
Oh right, so they mixed.
So a bit like us, where we have our electorate vote, and then we have our party preference vote. So it's a type of proportional thing. So the Greens and the Reform had got no constituency seats, I believe, but they have picked up quite a few on the MMP, what do you call it? The regional votes.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's done by population. So, anyway, SNP, none of it's unexpected, because before the elections, they were saying it will be about Reform and the Greens, and basically that's where it is. But all of this has happened and probably might mean not much change apart from a feel good factor for Nigel Farage.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of change at all.
No.
Clayton's changed, as you say.
But it has showed them. But Starmer said,
I still don't think they're going to change the spots.
No. Because there was talk before, and we talked off air about Farage's party being funded largely by billionaires. So
Big donations, etc. But Restore. Have you heard of Restore? That was a breakaway from Reform, and that guy's even harder right than. And they didn't stand anyone in it. They didn't stand in the council elections. They weren't ready.
Another report that I got was a kind of a smear campaign being run by, I think, Labour. I think the same types of people who did the smear campaign against Corbyn, against the leader of the Greens.
Oh, the Greens, there was a big, which is quite interesting, because it broke sort of a week or so before... these elections, where this guy who had a mental illness, he stabbed someone, another fellow Muslim, in town. Then he went into a Jewish area
And stabbed a couple
in London, and he stabbed two Jewish men. They've all lived.
Yeah,
but which is really what's interesting. And Zach Polanski came out and said the police went over the top with attacking the assailant. They arrested him and got him.
Well, he's wielding a knife.
Yeah, Polanski got in trouble for that, and it was a big scandal. But then there's also been this, what they call this Corbyn issue in the Green Party, where the Green Party membership has grown from 60,000 to 250,000. And the allegations are that there's people got into the Greens Party who are anti-Semitic. Like the same type of issue with Corbyn, so they're saying it's part two. It's you know,
I forget the
Jaws 2 sort of thing. Yeah. So and the Greens haven't dealt with it that well. They've suspended some and everything else, and they're caught up. With Corbyn did a terrible job at opposing the anti-Semitic allegations, etc., which cost them the election, and from inside his own party, etc. So the Greens are facing, and they're all talking about it over there, the Greens are facing the same types of issues, because there are people that come in there, and the reason they've joined the Greens, they've liked their stance on Palestine and been opposed to the genocide, etc. But some of them are doing it, obviously, maybe doing it because they're anti-Semitic. And yeah. that's the issue. Whereas the issue from the Greens' perspective is basically it's about Zionism, it's about a genocide.
Yeah, I think Navarra Media raised it.
It's probably hurt the Greens even in this election. Some would have got the speed wobbles on it. And then the Polanski has apologised for his comments about the police, but it was also troubles. Once
too
it's
late.
Out,
too late.
It would have affected some. And I think it'd be too late.
Yeah, because I think that whole incident was a mental health matter. Yeah,
but isn't it interesting?
But then you mentioned the other day that they mentioned the two Jewish people got killed, but they didn't mention the
Muslim. It's huge. Right around the world, and I haven't checked out the papers.
They excluded the other victims.
You know, terrorist attacks against two Jewish men in London is the basic line of the headlines.
It's the
first person he attacked was a fellow Muslim.
And it was a friend. I think it was his friend.
The guy had a mental health episode.
And he spun out of control.
But that was dropped.
That was dropped. It was just two Jewish men.
That's the journalism again.
Isn't that poor?
Lazy
journalism with a bias.
Yeah. And the guy might very well went to the Jewish area because he was so angry with what was going on. But it should have been in context he attacked another man first.
This was a mental health.
Three people stabbed by a knife wielding assailant. One was Muslim, two were Jewish. That would have been a fairer type of headlines.
And the
man is believed to be suffering from
some kind of mental health issues.
Is known to mental health throughout. I don't know how he's put it, but fear about the coverage. But around the world, it was just terrorist attack against Jews, basically.
Lazy and biased.
Very much so.
Absolutely. So that's the update. So we'll know by now when time will go by. They've just about all finished doing the counting. They'll talk about it for a while, and Nigel Farage will Skype about it for some time, no doubt. But what it will actually mean, probably not a lot, apart from the Welsh parliamentary, because Labour's always run it. Yeah. So this time Labour might be a junior partner in a governing coalition. And Plaid Cymru will get a chance at the driver's seat. Interesting.
Yeah, just add that in there with Labour, because they definitely don't want reform anywhere near the...
And on that, can we just go back to what you talked about, Mick?
What's that?
About since we're on politics, about a New Zealand. Big article in today's paper, when I can find it.
About the
Grand Coalition.
It's a grand idea, and it's written by Audrey Young. It's in the New Zealand Herald today, Saturday, May the 9th.
Well, the possibility of a coalition is being mooted
between Labour and National.
Yes.
And at first I thought, oh no, I can't. That
but
can't
then,
be.
As we discussed, they're both after the same pool of swing voters.
Well, we know there's.
So the difference between the two could be wafer thin.
And there isn't huge stuff between them. You know, there's Labour's not a Labour Party like Brits. It's not a Labour Party that's sort of the working class.
Used to be. Not anymore.
That I mean. So when you look at it, a moderate National Party and a light Labour Party probably closer than ACT and New Zealand First.
And again, they're chasing the same pool of people, swing voters.
And why? And those swing voters vote. Labour can't be hard left because it can't
attract
the working class and the poor to vote in enough numbers.
So the difference between the two would be negligible. So it is within the realms of possibility.
It is. I would have, I hadn't thought about it. I thought, oh, no, surely not. But actually, it is a possibility.
Because you
have fringes on an ACT and a New Zealand First as a race-based, seems to be a race-based party.
Mm-hmm.
ACT is look after yourself as and they
a selfish party.
Look after yourself and don't mention the fact we all had inherited money, etc. But to start with, you know, that's the ACT party's philosophy. Look after yourself. It's a level playing field, but it isn't a level playing field. But that seems to be. Yeah, so we'll go back to maybe the results will be.
I hope not, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does happen.
Well, in the end of the day, it...
Or is it just...
Or
the person writing the article speculating that that could happen.
Yeah, what they're saying is what... Well, hey, maybe... And say what you said, Mick, very similar. A Labour light and a...
Well, they happen to appeal to the same pool of people again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Not saying they will, and they won't promote it. They're going to work together, but until after the election. And they don't. I don't think they foresee it. But hey, you've got people have parties have policies, and if some are to that, if National and Labor end up closer together than the further ones on the right or the ones on the left,
yeah,
maybe.
Interesting. Watch this space.
Yeah, but at least it's interesting that they put it out there, you know. Audrey has put it out there.
Second time it's appeared this week, though.
Yeah, you told me about it before this. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, some of the, one of these Labour supporters will say. The deluded ones, I call them.
Well, it would be the same with Labour when Labour in the UK when Labour went under Blair, right? You know, it was just a Tory light party, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, Labour light, yeah.
So.
Yeah, moderate National Labour light. Yeah,
and look at Starmer now. Really, he's really been hammered. Really, because they're just Tory. They're just a Tory light party with a little bit of you know. And they seem to make so many mistakes, and then try and fix them.
It's a cluster of mistakes.
Yeah. So you know, that's the UK.
Well, I've got a bit more about the UK because the UK stand to pay $2.3 billion a year to the EU. This is in response to Brussels has told Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer that Britain will have to make annual payments into European budgets for the first time since Brexit as part of the Prime Minister's reset with the bloc. European negotiators have made it clear that paying the cash expected to amount to £1 billion, $2.3 billion, is a condition of further access to the European Union single market. They want Starmer to make the concession in principle at a summit between the Prime Minister and European leaders this summer, for detailed negotiation on integration. The European Council has also called for a permanent mechanism for an appropriate financial contribution for any further access to the single market. It said this should be appropriately reflect the relative size of the UK's economy and the proportion of the internal market in which the UK aims to participate. So after all that Brexit fiasco.
This is just a backdoor being back into the EU, is it?
It was not potentially. Backdoor. This is just paying subscription fee to get in.
And
the ministers are carrying an audit of which sectors could most benefit from further integration, which includes chemicals, pharmaceuticals and cars seen as priority. Both the Tories and Reform are pledging to rip up Starmer's plan for further economic integration, which sounds like a whole load of hogwash. Britain, like any other country, relies on trade.
Always has.
Dame Priti Patel, Shadow Foreign Secretary, said the payment would be taxpayers' money handed to European institutions with no end date and no democracy. These are the same people that orchestrated
the Brexit
in the first place. And did they give a demo about mandate and democratic process?
Did you repeat that line again? Did old Patel get a gong?
Yes.
God.
Shadow, should
remain a shadow.
Yeah, an article the Observer on Sunday, Starmer reiterated his desire to negotiate close links, saying the world had changed since the Brexit vote. Brexit has damaged our economy. I believe that it's been a cluster of chaos and ruin. Ever since.
Is it an idea, a proposal, or is it going to happen?
Well, they're talking about it, and there's supposed to be some sort of summit in their summer. Iron out the details.
But
after all that expense and upheaval and
whatever else,
paperwork and customs, blah, 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 you're going to go back again, I think.
Should never left, aim.
Should never have left.
No, but okay, let's face it.
They voted for it, but the margin between those for and against was so wafer thin.
Wafer thin, yeah. Mm. But wasn't Farage and Boris Johnson behind the... Yes. Brexit, we need to sing Rule Britannia from a double-decker bus, you know.
While I'm living in South France.
I just feel sorry for the citizenry of the UK. Here we go again.
Yeah, because some of those parts of the United Kingdom, like Northern Ireland and Scotland, did very well out of the trade with the European Union.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Well, not Northern Ireland, but...
Southern Ireland,
Ireland proper. Yeah, they're still in the EU.
But Northern Ireland, we were talking about, they were trading there as well.
Northern Ireland's still doing all right because, of course, they've got a land border with... Irish Republic.
Yeah, and I think, talking about immigration, well, this act lays out plan for immigration. Seymour says New Zealand, a settler society, will welcome those who play by the rules. One question is, immigration plan, their immigration plan includes serious offenders deported no matter how long they've been in New Zealand. Skill categories expire every year. 5-year welfare stand down. And $6 daily fee for temporary work visas. Strong English language requirements and enforce the rules. No, law and order. And the next article, I think it was the next day. Yeah, migrants face new test to gain New Zealand citizenship. Applicants will be questioned about responsibilities and privileges.
Well, about some of the established...
Some of our established citizens should be...
Well, that should have always been in the case when we from the start. Right, have you read the Treaty of Waitangi? Do you know about our fisheries rules? Do you know our culture? You know, what's...
Do you know the UK have got one too, and I had a go, have a go at the exam, and even I struggled, and I'm English speaking. Because the question, rule... This one's of the Internal Affairs Minister. I refuse to give her a name. Migrants applying for citizenship in New Zealand will have to pass a new multi-choice test under a government initiative due to kick in late next year. Applicants will be quizzed in person on the responsibilities and privileges. Okay, yeah. Covering topics like the Bill of Rights, yeah. Voting rights, yeah. Structure of government, okay. They will need at least 75% of the questions correct to pass.
No mention of the treaty in there?
You're talking about the slutted arm person, aren't you?
Applicants currently only need to sign a form saying they understand these things. It does seem a bit lacklustre.
And will they...
must also meet other requirements regarding residency, like good character.
And if it's multi-choice, if it's a multi-choice questionnaire, will that get leaked out to the public so everyone will know which ones to fill in just by memory?
Well, who knows? People seeking citizenship should understand New Zealanders believe in certain rights like freedom of speech. Well, that's under attack at the moment, isn't it? Or no one person or group is above the law. I would question that. Other proposed questions topics include human rights, certain criminal activities, democratic principles, and travel to and from New Zealand. New Zealand First Winston Peters last year used his party's conference to push for a Kiwis value pledge. So, it's open to interpretation on what they decide their definition of Kiwiness or Kiwi values is in the hands of those who are orchestrating these sort of changes.
Yeah, should they face, the permanent citizen should face some of these littles.
We could have a talk about taxation and why we need tax, etc.
It's interesting they've come out of this, though, cause shortly after the article we talked about last week by Sir Peter Gluckman and
Paul Spoonley and the Lala.
People, Place and Prosperity Report.
When they sort of raised these sort of questions, it's interesting...
This is a response.
But let's face it, great. Let's have these discussions. Let's bring them out.
I wonder if they get as much grief as we did, or I've had the last few weeks talking about that, and now I've been scrupulously careful about not highlighting any one group over another.
It's a numbers game, eh, Mick? I see there's no questions here on the tax system.
Not a mention of that.
Or the treaty,
New Zealand history.
This government's always, we talked about, I think it's 2 weeks ago, they want to remove references to the Treaty of Waitangi in certain departments.
They wouldn't
detail which departments or where that would drop.
That was New Zealand worst, wasn't it? That was their coalition agreement stuff.
It's going to be a very interesting election coming up.
Yes. If we follow the current trend, immigration could become an election issue.
I think it will. It could well be. I think New Zealand First will be definitely pushing that. Rightly or wrong. And all fair to have the debate, but it turns into just an attack on one group of people. But that's the danger.
That's the danger. It could be hijacked.
Be xenophobic and stuff like that.
Wouldn't condone that. But we do need to talk about some hard issues like numbers.
The numbers game.
Infrastructure, which we've talked about ad nauseum.
Yeah, yeah, but they don't want to go there.
Yeah, I see the Nats, you know, there's quite a lot in the paper for the Herald, but surprising for the National Party newsletter.
Well, I mean, it hasn't been full of lifestyle articles.
No, really. They've actually...
And hot helipads.
The main paper was someone was wearing a tuxedo-clad director, allegedly hit a road worker, and he's up in front of the courts.
What's that headline say? Keys in his sock
and rude conduct claims at CEO's trial.
This is a guy.
Oh, he's got name suppression, has he?
Well, so far, yeah, so wherever that'll stay.
This is the one that's alleged to have used his car to bump into someone.
So they're just sort of saying the police said he smelled of alcohol and the gentleman was characterised as rude and generally belligerent.
And they won't have been his first time because that sort of character has probably done this on more than one occasion.
It's a sense of entitlement.
Yeah, he's an entitled person.
Going back, the Nats are talking about raising the super age.
Oh, okay.
They're not going to fight it on the election, but has confirmed the party will campaign on it. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon has confirmed his party will campaign on lifting the age of eligibility for superannuation at this year's election.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
They've talked about it for some time. This idea has been mooted before, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Last 5 years, five for 6 years.
And it's mooted that it'll do it from 2037.
That's 18 years away. Make me 84.
Yeah. Yeah, so
if I lived that long.
Once you're qualified, you're right. So it's not a threat to us oldies, but the younger ones, we don't know what they're going to raise the age to,
and this will disadvantage certain groups of people who have hard physical work.
Yeah.
They already have severe medical issues as a result of that hard work and now be expected to work longer. This came up in France. This is what triggered the riots in Paris.
Yeah, we remember that.
The pensions and the very thing about people with physical hard jobs being disadvantaged, having to work longer with continuing health problems as a result of their hard work, physical work.
Yeah.
We saw that with that. You remember when the elections were on last time, I brought in some stats about who voted and the groups, age of groups, and there's a big drop off in Maori and Islanders voting after the age of 65 or 60 or something.
Okay, is there a correlation between life expectancy?
I wonder. So you know, that's the reality. Is that
the harder you work, the shorter your life,
and the poorer you are, the shorter your life.
You don't have access to medical, good food,
the whole
shelter, the whole thing.
Going back to Sir David Attenborough, he's had risks with tigers biting his head off and snake bites, but he hasn't had any risk from deprivation of food or housing
or quality of life,
and has had access to medical whenever he's needed it. But that's the thing. Who will this punish? You go up to 67 or 68.
It'll be the same group of people who are all being punished now.
Yeah.
Or disadvantaged now.
And let's face it, if you're wealthy, the chances are that you won't just live to 75
and
die.
You'll have access to specialist treatment privately.
And you get the pension for longer. My mum's 97.
And so she's had a pension for a long time.
Reasonably privileged. So she has always been able to go to the dentist, to the doctor, to the ear people and all that. So, so she's blessed with good health and a long age. I don't know if she would consider it being blessed to be this old, but that's another story.
But she's had access to a good quality of life.
Yeah, we say the poor don't tend to live that long. There's the exception, but it's not the rule.
Yeah, that's versus means testing it.
Mm. Well, that's where the aim. If they're going to talk about raising the retirement age, and people don't like the word means testing.
Makes people break out of cold sweat.
But if you have a parliamentarian that happens to be 80 and he's got houses and a parliamentary salary and a parliamentary pension
and a farm
and a state pension,
and you go on,
it goes on and on,
and we're not going to have the debate.
In terms of pensions, who's costing the state more than...
And it'll be paid longer because he'll live longer.
Yes.
He or she will live longer. The better off you are, odds are, you live longer. You look at the average age in Remuera to the average age in Aotearoa. I bet you there's a big difference. I I haven't got the stats here, but you know, if you actually looked around and looked, poor areas, what's the age life expectancy?
Yeah,
but well, these things should be talked about.
Would be lower than more well-to-do areas, I'm sure, for that very reason, access to medicine and good food and shelter.
It goes on.
So something that I thought that was interesting.
Well, it's interesting if it's going to become an election.
Just like the free trade agreement, just like the VSA, just like the migrant stuff here.
And another couple of things that have caught my eye. Oh, there's another. So Rod Jury's in trouble for... he's handed back his New Zealand of the Year title, I see, for alleged misconduct claims. So he denied the allegations.
There was three, wasn't there?
Well, that's to play out.
Right.
And so, but anyway, he's handed it back in. The other thing is I see Mikey Sherman has quit TVNZ.
All right.
You know she got suspended and there was a row in Parliament about her and all that?
No.
She got in trouble for saying something or hassling a MP, I believe.
Right. Stuart Smith, I think that's what...
But anyway, she's leaving TVNZ.
But I suspect it goes back to that earlier issue where she allegedly made that homophobic slur during that pre- or post-budget event in Willis's office last year.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
So there just seems to be a lot of moving parts to that one.
But anyway, she's chucked her.
And it was immediate too.
I'm sure she'll find a position on the platform.
She'll
have a blog. She'll be involved in some sort of blog.
There's other media jobs out there, so she might have a rest for a while.
She will be missed.
The other thing that caught my eye, and we're talking about unfairness and inequality, etc. This is about National given over $6 million in War Chest donations last year, almost $4 million more than the Labor Party.
Gee.
The David Seymour-led ACT Party also received more donations than the Labor Party, $2,445,000 and change, and Labor got $2,400,000. So it just shows you how much wealth, how much money goes into politics.
And that further reinforces the disparity between not just parties but the population.
Incomes.
Any Labour support doesn't have $100,000 that they can chuck in.
Yeah, so you also have to buy an awful lot of $5 sausages at a sausage sizzle to make up for someone wealthy chucking in a couple hundred grand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite good. There's all the different donors, etc.
How did the Greens get? Did they get?
The Greens still got quite a lot of money. They received $1.8 million.
To Party Māori?
To Party Māori received, New Zealand First received $1.3 million and a bit, and to Party Māori received $140,000. So it just shows you the disadvantage.
Disparity in incomes.
Yeah, so you've got, the Party Māori got $141,000 and National Party got $6 million.
What'd you say the Greens got?
No, hang on. The Green Party received $1,848,000.
Yeah.
So Te Pāti Māori didn't get... The Opportunity Party's got $180,000 and Te Pāti Māori got $140,000. John Tamahere being the biggest donor.
Right.
But how do you go back? Your money in politics, of course,
The amount of advertising that war chest can buy, and pamphlets and all the rest of it.
And we see that in America. They allow money into it, and it's just they've got decent candidates, but then AIPAC and other lobbying groups, but AIPAC's one of the big ones, they push their money in and say, we don't like you, and they will do it direct, but they'll pay another candidate.
They'll use it to undermine another candidate.
They spend millions. To stop people,
Remember the talk about electoral funding, public funding of elections. That disappeared very quickly.
Very quickly. So it rears its head every now and again, and it just disappears just as quickly.
Yeah.
So it just shows you that money.
Oh, money does influence. Money talks.
Literally. Yeah. So, given a war chest like that, given their kind of silent complicity over certain things in the world, does say a lot.
It doesn't bode well, does it?
No. It's actually appalling, to be frank. That we live in a supposed democracy and we vote for people, but these people are influenced by external forces.
So yeah, so that's interesting that how much the difference is, and I've always known that. I remember my dad telling me, this is going back in the 70s and 80s, the Fletcher family always gave money to the Nats, but they also gave it to Labor.
Hedging their bets.
They're hedging their bets. And some, obviously, there's one donor in there tends to do the same. Mm. So they obviously will stay in good. Whoever the government is, let's just stay in good.
Yeah.
And goes back to what we sort of hinted on about maybe this grand coalition between the two centrist parties.
Mm.
You know? Oh, well, my subdivision isn't going to be stopped if I'm, whether it's Mary or Jane who's the local MP, because, I think I've been a donor to them.
Mm, you know? Yes. It's all about self-interest.
Yeah.
No, about we the people stuff. Yeah.
Now, the other thing is, there's a thing, and I can't find the article, but I noticed that Tama Pōtaka from the Nats, they were talking about changing the rules around dockland so that they can get rid of areas that are owned, bits and pieces of land that are owned by DOC. This is the conservation estate. Yeah. So
the thin end of the wedge, is it?
Well, that's the danger. And to be fair, DOC often ends up with bits and pieces of land everywhere. That was too steep or the end of a road or inaccessible.
Too difficult to...
Yeah, and some of that could have well been Māori land, occupied land way back.
Or
in the area of fiefdom, etc. But, of course, so... On paper, it sort of sounds, that block of land just doesn't, it's hard to pest control, there's no access.
Yeah.
Why don't they get rid of it and let the local farmer have it? But the danger is, where does it stop? This is an iwi territory. Rather than sell it back,
give them back to it.
If it was originally an iwi area, see if they want it. And they might sell it. Of course, because...
Well, they should be at least given the
opportunity.
They may well be under the government laws. Often that stuff has to be offered back. Government, I think it still applies. Government-owned land, etc. If you have to offer it.
Are working, that'll soon be removed.
Yeah, but it's an interesting one because I have two thoughts on it. I do drive places and you see pockets of land that are over there and you can't access it because it's got to go for farmer land or whatever else. But then I think, why can't, the trouble is if you get rid of it, will they be allowed to just take the trees down and put some more cows on it? Or swamp. Wow. Swamps worry me more than even trees, anything with a swamp on it should be a priority. We need more. We should be buying areas of swamp, et cetera, to act as sieves. So.
Incentivise it, yeah.
So watch the space on that one. Forest and Bird have come out very hostile to the suggestion. Like you said, whoever said it amongst you two, the thin end of the wedge.
Potentially.
But it's something, the same thing, needs a discussion.
We're not allowed, sometimes it doesn't happen. They just bulldoze it through.
Well, it can go through and then they go, whoops. And then it say, oh, yeah, that's a nice piece of copse of bush, etc. And then it goes and then suddenly, oh, there's a quarry there. Is that really, But okay, it's got to be looked after.
And on that note, it could be regarded as a disturbing note. We're out of here. You'll catch us on Free FM on our podcast and on freefm.org.nz.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.